Today is March 16th, 2016, and this is episode number 351 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm one day older and deeper in debt. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything, you can shoot us a note at ACM at macobserver.com, or you can hit us on Twitter at Context Machine, where we'd love for you to follow us, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Only one day older.
Yeah, you know, another day here and there.
Yeah, I guess they add up over time.
Yeah, they do. If you want to make it slightly more depressing and look at it simply within the scope and context of the Apple Context Machine, I am a week older and deeper in debt.
Yeah, that's suddenly a lot sadder.
Mm-hmm. So I tried to keep it as uplifting as possible, Jeff. I tried. And what do? You drag me right down into the muck.
Yep.
Friends like these. Folks with friends like these. I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep in mind, I didn't put you back down in the well again.
See, you know, your refusal to watch Buffy is because you need to watch Buffy and you need to watch Angel, because there are so many great lines, and I could say them to you, but you won't know what they, you just, I mean, and you would love them. You would relish them and enjoy them as much as I do.
You know, I did watch the series and love it all the way up until I was dumped with the most epic spoiler for the entire series, you know, just dumped right in my lap. So what was it? Two seasons I saw, because I saw up to the point.
You watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Drusilla. It's the end of the episode.
Spoiler alert. Let's give a spoiler alert to our fans who, for some reason, haven't watched the show. Although I'm pretty sure that Alone in the World is you. But go ahead.
It's very likely. So, Drusilla. Spoiler alert. End of an episode, Drusilla is standing in the trashed church holding Spike.
Right. That is the end of season two.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you need to watch season three, and then you need to start watching Angel. And season four congruently. So what you need, man, this is a fantastic show. You should not allow the actions of inconsiderate people to spoil the wonderful show.
I really did love the two seasons that I saw.
It's because they're great.
Yeah, they were really good.
It's great TV.
Yes.
And then you can say something about pushing me back into the well, and then I can say something about how I'll put you back in your box and
we'd both go
your closet, actually. And I messed up my own line. I got so flustered over not being able to say something about putting you back in your closet. So anyway, watch the show, please. Just watch the show.
All right, I'm working through my issues.
Watch it with a WordPress girl.
I know she enjoys the series too.
Yeah, there you go. Y'all can watch it together.
All right, I'm working through my issues.
Okay, all right. Speaking of issues.
Yeah, should we just end the show right now?
You know, we should probably count our blessings and, you know, and go with it. But let's go through the motions.
All right. I know, as long as we're here.
All right. So listen, folks, we are going to talk more about Apple versus FBI. I know we've talked a lot about it, but here's the deal. It's been, I think we've said this, it's been this unending onslaught of information, developments, filings, statements, hearings. This is the story that has been constantly evolving for three solid weeks. And I know we talk about it a lot, but it's so important. And it also occupies a lot of what we do every day.
Right. And in our defense, it's been a whole week since we've talked about it on Apple Context Machine.
It has been. So let's see. Now we have we have one topic that's not about about Apple and the FBI, and then we have two topics that are related to that. So how about we roll some dice this summer to figure out which one we're going to do?
Oh, good.
Speaking of which, by the way, I've been reading, there's a new system of D&D out, the fifth edition.
Oh, okay.
And it's really, really good. It's it hands down the best edition yet.
That's great.
Yeah, it's tons of fun. All right, so I'm going to have a 33% chance for one of the three topics.
Okay.
And the non-FBI topic will get the bonus 100%.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, it's 67 or above will be that we talk about something other than the FBI first.
Okay.
74. We are talking about the March 21st. Did Nightshade have something to say?
Apparently.
Yeah, she's been really vocal lately. We had someone write in for I think it was for TDO. We had someone write in asking if everything was okay with Nightshade.
I think everything is okay. I don't know why she's decided to become so talky just recently. But I check on her all the time. And I always make sure she has food and water and gets lots of loving. And she's just started this thing where
maybe she has something to say about the March 21st media event.
I have a feeling maybe she might be talking about that. What's that, Nightshade? It would have been so great if she had meowed right then.
It would have been. Well, so just edit one in.
Yeah.
And then people will think it's really funny. Here, is it ready? Ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Nightshade, you silly cat.
By the way, folks, notice Jeff's how honest Jeff's laugh sounded. And now remember that when you hear him laughing at one of my stupid jokes.
Well,
see, to wit. So,
you know,
here's the deal. Here's what I want to know. Apple has officially invited people to an event on March 21st. That's next. Is that next Tuesday? Next Monday?
Next Monday.
Apple never does a Monday event.
No, but their schedule on Tuesday is kind of filled.
Now
Nightshade's upset. Yeah. Tuesday,
oh, right,
the 22nd, right, is their hearing date.
Right. All right. So the 21st. Apple's going to announce some new stuff. You know, we're hearing the, you know, iPad Air 3 or iPad Pro Nano or something. Mm-hmm. The iPhone SE, which would be a new 4.7-inch device. Is that right?
Right.
And new watch bands or something, new colors maybe. We're not actually going to get new Apple Watches, which is
Or maybe annoying. New partnerships with other companies, like this shows you, yeah, just like how much stuff. Just shows you how much of a watch Brian, I can't hardly even speak today. A guy that follows watch stuff all the time, not me.
It's aficionado.
Thank you. You know, my problem is I learned how to speak in Missouri.
Oh yeah, that'll do you in.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Of the things that Apple is going to be announcing, are you interested in any of them? Are you going to buy any of them?
I want to buy. I don't need to buy. And I think I want to buy the same thing that you probably will buy, which is the updated iPad. Or iPad Air.
The iPad Air 3 or iPad Pro Lite.
iPad Pro-ish.
Maybe they'll call it
the iPad Intern.
There have been. Did you see? Ainsley and Sarah perk up at that?
Yeah. They're like, "Hey, we're getting iPads."
No. Yeah. No. They're in for eternal disappointment.
Maybe that's why Nightshade cries. She's so sad for our interns.
Well. Yeah. Whatever. So. Anyway, the rumors have been pretty consistent on this. My guess is that the rumors on Apple's naming convention for this device have hit that life cycle point where I consider them to be accurate, which says that Apple is not going to call this an iPad Air 3, that it's going to be some kind of iPad Pro. I don't get it. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I think it will add confusion to the product line. And yes, I get most people are totally capable of telling these devices apart, regardless of what they're called. But when you have several products, or in this case, two products with the same name, but distinctly different features, in this case, screen size, it's nice to have something that makes it easier to differentiate what it is that the consumers are buying and using.
Yeah, naming it along the lines of which accessories it supports, which is the only compelling reason to call it an iPad Pro, is because it's going to support Apple Pencil and keyboard, some kind of keyboard, right?
Right.
Naming it by the accessories it supports makes no sense to me. That's like a very un-Apple way of thinking about it.
Well, they could call it iPad Air with Apple Pencil support.
Or they could just call it iPad Air 3, and by the way, you can get a freaking Apple Pencil with it.
That's kind of crazy, but yeah.
I mean, it's not like iPad Pro has Apple Pencil in the name.
Right. And if we compare it to, say, the MacBook Pro line, that's confusing. So what do you have? MacBook Pro. Okay. Which model? Early 2013. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's true. I've long had an issue with that too, but whatever they call it, I want it. I'm going to absolutely and positively get a new iPad Air, or a new 9.7 inch iPad, whatever it's called. I may or may not get the Apple Pencil with it. I probably won't get the keyboard.
You know, if you're going to get only one of the accessories, I would go for the pencil.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, it depends on what you want to do with it.
Well, that's why I said if I were. Yeah.
Anyhow. Yeah, right. We both know that I
love your art.
I can't just stop. My art is terrible. So just, we both know that I can't draw, but we both know that I like doing it.
Yeah, that's reason enough to have an Apple Pencil.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I've had a lot of fun with the other various styluses out there. The Bamboos. Who's that from?
The Bamboo is from Wacom.
Wacom. Yeah, the Bamboo has been like the best. My favorite stylus. Of the ones that I've used, I haven't used anywhere near as many as you have, but I would certainly get an Apple Pencil.
The Apple Pencil is really nice. As a matter of fact, as of now, the Apple Pencil is my de facto stylus.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I do carry several in my bag when I'm out and about, but I'm just using Apple Pencil.
That sort of makes sense. That doesn't make sense at all. Why are you carrying several? You're only going to use the pencil. You're a weirdo.
Yes, I am.
So anyway, yeah, I'm going to get the new 9.7 inch form factor iPad. I've been waiting for it for years. I tried to hold out for the 2. I couldn't because I dropped my iPad 3 and shattered it, and I had to buy an iPad Air 6 months before the 2 came out, which was like super insanely annoying. And I've been waiting for it since. If I had the 2, I would not get the 3.
Sure, I get that. And I do not have the iPad Air 2. I have the original iPad Air. And right now, I don't think I can justify getting the iPad Air 3 because I have an iPad Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but you mentioned that you might.
I would like to.
I see.
But you know me, I may break down and just have to get one.
So how about the iPhone SE? This is going to be the 4.7 inch iPhone. and you know, essentially similar to the size of an iPhone 5.
Yeah, 5S. Screen size, it would be the same size as an iPhone 5 or 5S.
But it's likely to have almost everything that the 6S has.
Yes. And that's pretty compelling. If you need a new iPhone and you don't like the idea of the larger screen that we have on the 6 and 6 Plus or 6S and 6S Plus, then this screen size is probably going to be pretty compelling. I will have to really think about whether or not I want to go to a smaller screen iPhone when it's time for me to upgrade again.
You do that thing with the where you put the invisible row of icons at the top of your screen so that you don't have to use the top of your screen to access apps.
Yes, just on my home screen. On all the other screens, I fill up the whole thing.
So, I mean, do you find the iPhone 6/6S form factor to be too big?
It's just slightly too big for me to use one-handed, which is why I put the row of invisible icons on my homepage.
So, to a certain extent, you're an ideal candidate for the SE.
To a certain extent, but I have grown accustomed to having the larger screen for apps. So, what I need to do over the next several months is decide if the bigger screen is worth sacrificing the comfortable one-handed use that I've always enjoyed, or is it worth it to get rid of the bigger screen in favor of true one-handed use again?
Gotcha. And I'm perfectly content with the 6S size, 6/6S size. I've been very happy that I don't want the Plus. The SE is not for me.
The Plus is definitely not for me. I believe you are right. I am a perfect candidate for the SE. But I have several months to decide if I want to stick with the 6S size screen or go back down to a smaller screen.
Fair enough.
I love how you serenade me.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's. It's kind of disappointing that we're not going to get Apple Watches this spring, that the Apple's going to wait until the fall. That's the current rumor.
Right. And on one hand, I'm kind of disappointed. On the other hand, I'm kind of okay with that because it feels like once a quarter almost, I'm having to shell out money for a new Apple thing. So it'll be nice to have a quarter where I can kind of catch my breath and stockpile a few more dollars, because I know at some point we're going to get new MacBook Pros, and that's something I really need to get. Mm. My computer is a little bit too long in the tooth.
I need a new Air. But you know what I really need, though? I actually just need that. So I've got a 2011 MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm. And no, we have the same model, the 13-inch. The same model,
yeah. And the reality is that machine is still plenty of Mac for what I use it for, which is usually it's writing on the go and writing if I travel. Mm-hmm. And for those tasks, it is just fine, but the battery's shot.
So I should probably just take the
battery.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about that a couple days ago.
Get another year or two of use out of it. I can't go more than about 3 hours now. And that's if I've got the screen turned down and Bluetooth turned off and apps quit.
Yeah, which makes the computer not all that useful for those 3 hours.
Yeah.
But hey, 3 hours. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I need to put new battery in mine, and I think that I can get another year or two out of it. No problem with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the other thing that would be very tempting for me on the 21st is if Apple announces that they are bringing the leather loop watch band to the 38-millimeter Apple Watch.
Useful or desired?
Desired.
Okay. Now, because I'm going to quibble with you. You're really going to try to stick on.
It would be useful for me because I want it. So, yes, I know that's desire. But on the other hand, they don't need to do that because I picked up a leather loop band for the 38 millimeter watch through AliExpress. Mm-hmm. And it was like $19 shipped.
Gotcha.
And I've been using that every day for like a month now. And it's great.
You know what I'm using right now?
What are you using?
I'm using my Zenith. I'm actually doing a week without the Apple Watch.
Wow. Tell me more.
See, folks, he's so brilliant in actually making that sound genuine. When the Apple Watch first came out, everybody and their brother, including we at TMO, did a week with the Apple Watch or a month with the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a year now, and I hadn't put my mechanical watch, my timepiece. It's been sitting in a winder for a year. And I hadn't taken it out. I haven't used it.
So it was really wound up.
they don't constantly rotate the winders. They actually rotate on the schedule. Because
I love this image of you let the watch sit in the winder for a year. You take it out of the little winder, you put it on your wrist, and the hands just start going zing really fast.
So I haven't worn my watch in a year, and it occurred to me that it would be interesting to see if, after having used my Apple Watch exclusively and religiously for a year, how I'd feel about going a week without it. Mm-hmm. Maybe longer, maybe a month. So no mixed usage here. I've got my Apple Watch sitting on my desk, and every day I wear my Zenith and wonder what temperature it is outside. Because I have no idea. I've been reduced to, if I need to know the outside temperature, I have to look it up on one of a half a dozen devices that are readily at my fingertips, like I'm some kind of animal.
Oh, I don't know how you're surviving.
I don't either. I tell you. And I have no idea what if I'm supposed to get up and move. Or, I don't know any of that stuff. It's interesting. And it turns out, by the way, that when you tap a mechanical watch, nothing happens.
No, you just get a fingerprint on the crystal.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I'll be writing about that next week.
Awesome. I can't wait to see what you think after going a whole week.
Yeah, I am too. And I think that I'm a good case study here because I'm still of the opinion that I like my Apple Watch, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
So, what's it like now that I've grown dependent on it, and I truly was dependent on it for several things? How am I going to feel not being able to use it? So we will see. This is day three.
Yeah, and you haven't called me in a panic at like 2 a.m. Jeff, what's the temperature where I am? So I'm taking this as a good sign.
Oh, man. Talk about missed opportunities.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Related. You might want to put your phone on vibrate tonight.
Oh, I hate you.
Okay, so if you've been following the FBI thing, you probably understand it, right?
Yeah.
The FBI versus Apple thing.
Yep. I'm familiar with it to a degree.
And what – cut to the chase. John Oliver on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, the HBO show. Mm-hmm. Brilliant show. Brilliant show. Jeff and I are both big fans.
Oh, yes.
Are you a big fan?
Oh, man. Someone needs to create a new award just for his brilliance so they can give it to him. Because he deserves a trophy.
Yeah, he really does. And you know, it's interesting. It's interesting when a show like that isn't dependent on corporate sponsorship besides HBO itself. And he doesn't make fun of HBO. He doesn't joke at their expense. But, you know, essentially all of the corporations are seemingly at least fair targets. But in addition to that, he's got a week to do research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a week to put together special content for a half hour show and a week to make phone calls. And, you know, the show that he came from, The Daily Show.
Right.
You know, it was doing four shows a week.
Right. And even still, the content that he was providing to that show was amazing.
Well, I'm thinking of all the content on The Daily Show. The generally speaking, the stuff that The Daily Show is doing is stuff that has happened within the last 24 hours.
Right.
So you don't get a week to research that.
Right.
But they had a huge staff. Did you watch Jon Stewart's last episode?
No, I didn't get to see it because I am a cable cutter.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I did. And one of the things is he actually took a camera through. It was an obvious excuse to show off everybody that works on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jon Stewart was always one to give credit to other people. And so he has an enormous staff, that's for sure. But again, it's a daily show. It's not a weekly show. And John Oliver's show is not a similar format, but it's similar in concept. Except for he's got a week to do it. And he's able to sometimes he goes in depth on some topics that don't get any depth anywhere else.
True. And he has a way of offering up a clarity on topics that you're not getting other places.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And his segment on Apple versus FBI got almost everything right. I don't remember the specifics, and I didn't actually go and rewatch it again before we talked about it because, you know, that'd be foolish.
Right. I mean, top men.
Right. I remember having one little, that's not quite right, in a 15-minute segment. It's one little tiny thing that I thought wasn't quite right.
Just being mostly pedantic because John Oliver is so amazing, it was 18 minutes.
18 minutes, excellent. So one little twinge of that wasn't quite right in 18 minutes is a pretty astounding record.
Right, especially on this topic.
Yeah, especially on this topic. The rest of the stuff he got right. And he set up the sort of like both looks, the sort of pro law enforcement side and the pro privacy side. And he set them up without being unfair to, in my opinion, to either side.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah, and he did make it clear right up front that he was on the side of maintaining and protecting our encryption. But even still, he did a nice job of representing the FBI's side as fairly as he could.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not. Anyway, whatever. It was a fantastic segment. And here's why we're mentioning it. If you are having any difficulty with this concept, with understanding the points of this story, understanding the sort of background issues, there's an 18-minute video out there that'll explain it to you and give you some laughs along the way.
Now, yes,
there's no small part of me that while I was watching it, there's no small part of me that was saying, man, it's like he reads TMO.
Yeah.
He covered almost all of the things that we have called out as important, and he laid them out in a very similar way that we do. And I don't actually, I have no idea if he reads the Mac Observer, but it doesn't even matter. Lots of people are talking about this.
Right. But it was nice to see that validation, because, I mean, we're so deep in this right now. It can at times be hard to see the overall picture that we've created. And then to see it from someone else's perspective, in this case, John Oliver's, and say, oh, that's exactly what we've been doing for the past 3 weeks, what we've been saying for the past 3 weeks.
We're inside the echo chamber, and we know that. And so seeing a perspective similar to ours laid out in a manner similar to the way we've been considering it by someone who's not in the echo chamber, it was definitely refreshing. But above and beyond it being all about us,
right?
It is a great segment, and if you're not following this and you want to, it's a good place to start. And if you know someone who's interested but doesn't quite get it, or someone who's willing to take a look and who's someone who doesn't get it but is willing to actually watch something, that's a great place to send them. We've got it posted at TMO, so you can watch it on our site, or you know, you can go find it on your own. We'll have it in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, it's good to see. It's good to see
John Oliver.
This topic being this covered topic, in such a way.
I was guessing where you were going.
Yeah. Sorry, I was trying to scroll down and see what you had just typed me. So you distracted me. It's all your fault.
This is all your fault. It is. Be glad that all I did was send you a number and not a picture of what's happening on my side of the sound booth.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You are. Well, okay. Yes.
Richard Clark.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, let's go. Let's start. Let's go to, well, I don't know. Here, let's do it right.
We're going to do this.
Let's do it right. Now we have a 50-50 chance here. Topic one or topic two? Topic one.
Oh.
Apple's court filing.
All right. Well, now you've given everyone a little bit of foreshadowing because they know what topic two is.
That's true. It's true. Apple filed a response to the FBI's response to Apple's response to the FBI.
Confused? You won't be after this week's episode of Soap.
It was a 26-page filing.
Mm-hmm. Which wasn't bad.
I'm actually gonna open it up because that's just how I roll.
All right. Well, I have it here as well. I even highlighted passages in the PDF because that's how I roll.
That is good. Did you were they the same passages that I highlighted in my article?
For the most part, but I was also looking for other things that weren't in your article.
Yeah, that's what I said. Did you? Okay. So all right.
The thing is. I was highlighting without thinking specifically about what you're calling out your article. So, I hadn't read your article yet. So it was, but I knew you had written it, and
you went to rabbit hole.
Yeah. Anyhow, yes, I highlighted some things that are not in your article. There, cut to the chase.
I cannot wait to find out what those things are. So I have a piece where I pulled out six of what I think are the most powerful quotes in the filing. Mm-hmm. The thing, you know, that make Apple's best arguments. You can go read. I'd love for you to read that. I'd love for you to read it and to actually let me know what you think. That would be fantastic.
I like it. I think it's a nice piece. And I like the perspective that you offer to each of the quotes.
Thank you. So you folks can go and read that, but I thought we'd talk about here on the show that we talk about this from sort of a more holistic level. And one of the first things that you noted, and you noted this before you read the fact that I had noted it too, mm-hmm. was the fact that Apple had this tone that was completely different from the FBI's previous filing.
Oh yes, the FBI filing. Reading that, I was taken aback because it is so unlike any filing of that type that I have read before.
Yeah, the FBI, you know, like, accused Apple of actually, I'll just quote myself. The tone of Apple's filing is remarkably constrained compared to the FBI's previous filing. In that document, the FBI accuses Apple of colluding with the Chinese government, putting profits before patriotism, and otherwise being scallywags and ne'er-do-wells. And you independently thought mostly the same thing.
Yes. The FBI's response to Apple's filing was so emotionally charged that it felt to me like they walked up to the line of making ad hominem attacks and stopped right there.
One of the most egregious things to me was how they used Apple's transparency report on how many warrants, how often Apple received warrants, and what percentage of those cases Apple provided either a foreign government or local law enforcement here in the U.S. with some information, quote unquote, some data related to that warrant.
Yeah, that was interesting, and it was surprising that the FBI chose to cherry pick its facts from that report and then grossly misrepresent the information.
Yeah, because what they basically said is look, Apple's giving all kinds of information to the Chinese, and Apple has you know, worked with the Chinese, given the Chinese access to stuff that they're denying to Apple, and the data that they're using is stuff like subpoenas on lost and stolen iPhones, like location data. And mm-hmm. data that's in the iCloud, and very specifically, actually, we can even quote Apple here, because, you know, that's something we have the power to do.
And we do. Sing it, Brian.
Can you make sure to pull this out in post?
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. What is he? Compel creation. Quoting Apple, contrary to the government's misleading statistics. Again, it's very nice to be validated by someone other than me.
Yeah.
Back to quoting, which had to do with the lawful process and did not compel the creation of software that undermines the security of its users. Apple has never built a backdoor in any kind of any kind into iOS, or otherwise made data stored on the iPhone or an iCloud more technically accessible to any country's government. Just directly calling out the FBI for frankly shenanigans.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they were totally right in doing that, just as the FBI would be right in calling out Apple if they were doing the same thing.
Yeah. Apple said, the government is wrong in asserting that Apple made, quote-unquote, special accommodations for China, as Apple uses the same security protocols everywhere in the world and follows the same standards for responding to law enforcement requests. This is gonna actually come back in our last segment too, because of something some former NSA lawyer said.
Right. Okay, people. That's a little more foreshadowing.
A hint, even.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, the tone, Apple's tone is very fine. You take the low road. We're gonna take the high road.
Right.
And it was very nice to see.
You know, the first quote of the article that jumped out to you, mm-hmm. is something that jumped out to me as well, and it's partway through the introduction, so like maybe a third of the way through the introduction, and mm-hmm. And the quote is, according to the government, short of kidnapping or breaking an express law, the courts can order private parties to do virtually anything the Justice Department and FBI can dream up. The founders would be appalled.
The founders would be appalled. Such a powerful statement.
Right. And they're not referring to Deep Space Nine, just so you know.
They are not. In fact, they're referring to the founding fathers who drafted up both the Constitution and the very Ulrich Act that's being used here.
Right.
And it's a subset of the founding fathers who drafted the Ulrich Act.
Right. And so the takeaway that I have from that quote is that that Apple is saying the Ulrich Act is not just a free pass for the FBI or any other government agency to do as they please without regard for the structures that are in place to restrict how government agencies operate.
Yeah, I thought that the entire breakdown, we'll have a link to the PDF itself if you want to go through it in the show notes. But I thought that the breakdown on why the Ulrich Act was being misapplied here and why it did not grant the courts or the government the authority to do what is being done, I thought that it was very compelling, very systematic, and really well laid out. And when the funny thing is, I mean, I know I'm a partisan here. I'm not only on Apple's side on this. I'm on the side of privacy and the belief that strong encryption makes all of us more secure, that it makes the country and our businesses more secure, and that this outweighs the impediment that it offers to law enforcement for surveillance. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm a partisan on this for sure. I've come to being a partisan in what I believe is an objective process. But I will not deny that I'm a partisan. And my point here is this. When I read through the FBI's previous filing, I thought it was a mess.
I agree. And it was so shocking to see a filing that felt like an emotional dump as opposed to a logical representation of their position.
Yeah. Well put. And Apple's is just very, very logical, very, you know, just very systematic, very, nope, this is where they're wrong. You know, they said this, but they left out that.
Right. Yeah. They broke their argument into four sections. And the first section being, the government is misrepresenting how they can use the Ulrich Act and what the scope of the Ulrich Act is and what its purpose is. And then next section is, you can't invoke the Ulrich Act the way the government is in this case. And then it goes on to break down the argument that the FBI used, comparing this case to a case where New York Telephone was required to help set up wiretaps many, many years ago. And then it goes on and wraps up with violation of the First Amendment and due process.
Yep. And the conclusion, we should probably specifically mention the conclusion here. They pulled out a quote from Justice Brandeis, Louis Brandeis, who made just this incredibly powerful statement, and Apple quoted him saying that almost 90 years ago, Justice Louis Brandeis, reflecting on the progress of science, quote unquote, beyond wiretapping, famously warned that, quote, the greatest dangers to liberty lurk in insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-meaning, but without understanding. That is at the heart of my concern over this entire issue.
Yes, and that quote is just wonderful because it encapsulates the issue just beautifully.
Yeah, I agree with that. So can you give us a couple of standout things that I did not find?
Let's see.
Or did not know.
Okay, so the things that I highlighted were primarily related to case law and common law, which is for a layman, those would be basically the same thing, meaning law that we have that wasn't created through legislation. So I have, let's see, under the government's theory, any ongoing post-purchase connection between a manufacturer or service provider and a consumer suffices to connect the two in perpetuity, even where, as here, the data on the iPhone is inaccessible to Apple. Now, that was a big standout for me, because the context of this is that the government is saying Apple has this direct relationship with the device, and they're citing the New York telephone case, and in this case, Apple is saying, no, we don't actually have that relationship that would be parallel to what was in the New York telephone case, because in the New York telephone case, all the equipment was owned by the phone company, and the phone company already had tools that they could use to do the types of things that the government was requesting. And in this case, Apple does not own the equipment. The equipment happens to be an iPhone, which is owned by an individual, or in this specific case, by San Bernardino County. But so for the sake of argument, by an individual. And so that to me is a big part of the argument supporting Apple's stand, which is that we don't even have the hardware that is being represented through the New York telephone case comparison.
Yeah.
That's a long-winded way of saying I really liked how Apple called that out.
Right.
Let's see. Another one that I found to be really interesting is a call out where Apple is shooting down the FBI's argument, which in this case goes back to cases involving Mountain Bell, which would be here in Colorado, and pen registers that were also put in place related to Penn Bell, and that in those cases, the FBI was talking about how the phone company was compelled to write code or to program something, and the FBI is equating what the phone company had to do in those cases to writing code, when in fact what the phone company was doing was setting parameters in equipment that they already had to do something that they could already do. So Apple's statement there is, the government seizes on the word programmed in those cases and superficially equates it to the process of creating new software. And that's a big thing too, because what Apple is being asked to do is monumentally different than what the phone companies had to do in those cases.
Yep.
All right. Another quote for me was, the government seeks to commandeer Apple to design, create, test, and validate a new operating system that does not exist, and that Apple believes, with overwhelming support from the technology community and security experts, is too dangerous to create. And that's just backing up everything they've been saying all along. I just really liked the concise and clear wording that Apple used.
Fair enough.
Then let's see. There's another one that I loved because of the way they chose to word it, and I'm trying to find where it is now. And of course, I can't find it.
Top men.
And I highlighted it so it would be easy for me to find. All right. So I will paraphrase the quote. And so basically what Apple is saying is, if you force us to write government OS, which is the name that they're using to describe this version of iOS that the FBI is trying to compel them to create, how long is it before you make us write eavesdropping OS and tracking OS?
And they put a sort of related to the same argument, quote, under the government's view, the state could force an artist to paint a poster, a singer to perform a song, or an author to write a book, so long as its purpose was to achieve some permissible end, whether increasing military enrollment or promoting public health as examples, unquote.
Yep, and that ties in perfectly to that.
All right, so it was an interesting filing. But there's one other thing on the FBI and Apple that I thought we could get into, and that was we have a couple of competing views from the intelligence world.
Oh, I found the quote. Can I read it real quick?
Of course.
Okay. Indeed, it is telling that the government fails even to confront the hypotheticals posed to it, and cites a couple cases, or explain how there is any conceivable daylight between government OS today and location tracking OS and eavesdropping OS tomorrow. Mm. I love that line.
It'd be interesting to see how the judge reacts. I mean, you know, this is the same judge that ordered Apple to do this in the first place.
Right. But the judge didn't have all of this extra case law and all of these new filings, plus all the amicus briefs that have been submitted by a long list of companies, organizations, and other experts.
It's true. Of course, you know, all those amicus briefs and filings didn't help Apple any in the completely unrelated case over iBooks pricing.
That's true. But I like to live in hope.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. So Richard Clark, top counterterrorism official under Clinton and George W. Bush, both, was essentially drummed out of the Bush administration for refusing to sign on to the idea that Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi government was behind 9/11. For what that's worth,
I think that's worth quite a lot.
Personally, I do too, because Richard Clark was right. You know, but hey, that's just nitpicking.
Yeah, but that's how you are.
Yeah, that is how I am. This guy is super smart, and when he has something to say, I tend to pay attention. He did an interview with NPR. You can listen to it. We've got a link in the show notes. You can listen to the whole thing if you want. But he basically came down more vociferously and vehemently on the same side that former NSA
vehemently and CIA director, or vehemently?
Probably vehemently. I think that's another word I've been mispronouncing all my life.
Well, the fact that with my speech impediment, meaning I learned how to speak in Missouri, that I was able to nail that one, I'm just going to gloat. Just yeah, so you know.
You should. I have harassed you for Warsh 1,000,000,000,000 times. And by the way, anyway, so I like it vehemently, because I've been mispronouncing that my entire life. So here we go with Richard Clark. He slammed the FBI and basically said the intelligence community is completely opposed to everything that the DOJ and the FBI said. He sort of set up this picture where You've got the DOJ and the FBI inside the executive, i.e. the White House, i.e. the Obama administration, as being for backdoors, and the rest of, you know, the rest of the folks who know being against them. I don't know if that's actually true. He's not in the government anymore. He just knows people that are.
My guess is that with his credentials, he is still very connected.
Yeah, he's connected, but he's not in the government. So, you know, right. He hasn't been sitting in on meetings at the White House, at least not that we know of. So, you know, he could be wrong. But he said, and I quote, every expert I know believes the NSA could crack this phone. But the FBI wants the precedent that the government can compel a computer device manufacturer to allow the government in. And he just he came down hard on the FBI, was incredibly dismissive of their arguments, their case, their desires, their end goals, and said that the intelligence world understands this, that we have to have strong encryption to protect ourselves from all the bad guys, and that it makes it harder for law enforcement to do its job is an unfortunate but necessary side effect, and that the benefits of being protected and stronger outweigh that added difficulty for law enforcement.
I agree with him.
He said, I don't think it's a fierce debate. I think that the Justice Department and the FBI are on their own here. You know, the Secretary of Defense has said how important encryption is when asked about this case. The National Security Agency director and three past National Security Agency directors, a former CIA director, which actually there's some overlap there because one of them is the same guy, a former Homeland Security Secretary, have all said that they're much more sympathetic with Apple in this case. You really have to understand that the FBI director is exaggerating the need for this and is trying to build it up as an emotional case, organizing the families of the victims and all that. And it's James Comey and the Attorney General is letting him get away with it.
That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, it's a very, very strong statement. But the flip side is, right? The flip side is we've got the first security person that I personally have been able to find, the first intelligence bureaucrat, professional. Sorry, I know I'm not trying to denigrate him. The first intelligence professional who has come down against Apple, and this is a guy named. Let me get his name. Is it Steve Baker? Yeah, Stuart Baker.
Stuart Baker.
He was speaking at a panel at South by Southwest this week. And he said he compared Tim Cook to Doris Day. But you actually explained that better when we were talking about it in the pre-show.
OK, so his analogy was, or his statement was, he was quoting someone else that said, I knew Doris Day before she was a virgin. And the reference is, there was a point in Doris Day's career, and Doris Day was an actress and a singer in Hollywood, and she very consciously changed her image to be very clean-cut, very naive, and very pure. And when she did that, that was a big part of her going on to the success that she had. But she had to create this persona of innocence. And that's the idea that they were trying to bring up when they referenced Doris Day.
Yes, Oscar Levant, who is a contemporary, said, I remember her before she was a virgin. Which is, first of all, hysterical, and second of all, biting commentary. And so what he's saying is that apparently Tim Cook is at one point has not been – that he remade his image as being pro-privacy and pro-encryption. And that's balderdash. Tim Cook hasn't remade his position here.
No, I don't think he has at all. I think that this is the position, the stance that Tim Cook has always had.
Yeah, he said, and I'm quoting, This is what he said on the panel. This is Stuart Baker, a former NSA attorney. He says, who remembers Tim Cook before he was a virgin? Look at his record in China. When China asked, Apple didn't even tell us what they were telling. Apple didn't even tell us they were doing it. Other countries are going to request access, and companies are going to give it to them once they demonstrate that they really need it. And then he said, how about this? If you refuse to access the government, if you refuse to provide access to the government is entitled to get every disclosure you've ever made for every other country. Because Apple is not telling us about China. If Apple is assuming the benefits of the privacy it is selling, how about it takes on some of the cost of crime? How about letting victims of crimes that have not been solved because of encryption sue Apple for damages? And he basically is saying that Apple has been working with the Chinese, and we have no evidence of that. And specifically, Apple specifically denies it, specifically and categorically denies it.
And also does that under oath.
Yeah, we're going to go a few minutes late here, by the way, folks, so bear with us. Apple did so under oath, and while Apple was not addressing Mr. Baker's comments in its most recent filing, it addressed the same thing that Mr. Baker is trying to say when it said that we've provided no greater access to any other country. We've never built in any back doors whatsoever. And I found Mr. Baker's stance here. Actually, part of the problem is that Mr. Baker also said that encryption is, quote unquote, oversold. He said, I got to find that quote here.
But while you look that up, I would like for Mr. Baker to offer up examples of Tim Cook before he was pro encryption and pro privacy.
Yeah. Right. Here it is. He said that encryption is the single most oversold technology in the public sphere. Says him.
I mean, yeah, it says him. I think right now the most oversold technology in around is electric cars. But that's really going to change. Yeah.
Okay, that's a rabbit hole for another time. Part of our point here is that yet another intelligence professional, i.e. Richard Clark, has come out saying that the FBI is wrong. But we do have the first intelligence professional that I've been able to find who says that the FBI is right and that Apple is wrong.
Now, what I find interesting about this is that much like the FBI, Mr. Baker is talking in generalizations, offering up mischaracterizations, and presenting an emotional argument, whereas Apple and the other companies and organizations that are supporting Apple, by and large, are presenting more reasoned, more level-headed arguments.
That's true. The most compelling arguments have been, look at these victims. Don't we owe it to them to get into this phone? Which,
right,
philosophically and intellectually, I find reprehensible and invalid. But that, you know, that's subjective. You're gonna believe what you how you wish to believe, and probably not going to change your mind on that. Now, there were people on the panel that took issue with what he said. Amit Yoren, who's president of the computer security company RSA, a company I'm not familiar with. He was on the panel too. He said, we have heard resoundingly from the intelligence community that it does not favor weakening security or encryption. So this is really not a national security issue. This is a law enforcement issue. That's sort of, yeah, to my point, the intelligence world is basically saying the FBI is wrong.
Yes.
And there we go. Except for Stuart Baker.
Right. Well, you know, at least there's Stuart Baker.
Yep.
Someone has to carry the torch.
All righty. Well, so we did go over a few minutes. Sorry about that, folks. Next week's show should be all about the March 21st event.
Yeah.
And it should be.
It Fingers should be. Words. Yeah. Well, yeah. Famous last words, because Apple's hearing is on the 22nd, so the day before we record.
All right. Well,
so half the show can be about Apple's media event.
We will see. So let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter at Context Machine. Follow us or just yell at us, whatever. You don't even have to follow us. Just let us know what you think. We'd like you to follow us.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. Just tell us what you think. You can shoot us a note, ACM at MacObserver.com. You can hit me up. I'm TM O'Brien on Twitter, and you're Jay Gamet.
Mm-hmm. I'm at Jay Gamet.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we very much like hearing from you. There we go. The thing
Oh yeah, I know how that goes. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, well, go ahead and write us at ACM at MacObserver.com.
I was in the wrong key. I'm never in the wrong key. I'm sometimes in the wrong key, but
yeah, but that's how wound up you are right now.
Wow, wrong key. That's amazing. All right, so our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.